pocket, looking in zone, and touchdown. Great catch, Terrence Tolliver. And he's got it. Pasker again. So
onside,
it's a three-point game.
Onside.
And no secret
go,
what the Tigers are doing now,
let's
as you hear the instructions from the sideline. Second and 10. Good protection this time. Does he have an open man? Yes! Tolliver! Touchdown! Second of the game for Terrence Tolliver.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So how's your week been this week, pal?
Well, aside from that football game, pretty good.
Yes, mine was as well, but our week was nowhere near as good as one of our very loyal listeners, Adam Stalker. He's the Adam that we talk about that always gives us questions for the show. He's been a great fan of the show, great friend of the show. A lot of our stuff that we talk about is thanks to him because he comes up with such great questions. This lucky SOB got a chance to go to the game in Calgary, where the Ticats played the Stamps this past weekend. He won a contest through the Ticats website and got a chance to watch the game at McMahon Stadium. And he is kind enough to share some stories with us. So he posted this on the comment section of Three Down Nation, but I'd love to share his stories here because I think it's pretty cool. This kind of shows how close this league is when it comes to fans interacting with players. So he starts off by wanting to thank the Ticats and Red Tag for the trip to the game as he flew to Calgary and back on the team flight. So he got to interact with a lot of the players, and here's some of his stories. So he says he boarded behind Peter Dykowski, and he can easily see that Peter is one of the most liked players on the team. Brandon Banks had the biggest smile on the plane, asking us if these were our seats as he attempted to find someone to trade him a window seat. I guess Speedy B does not like sitting on the aisle or in the middle. He finally got the window, and he celebrated. Courtney Steven was sitting in Adam's seat, so he had to hear it apparently from most of the team on being in the wrong seat. He says the majority of the players slept most of the way there, except for Davis, not Emmanuel Davis, the other Davis, whose name I cannot remember. Apparently he watched tape the entire flight, which is showing where he's at in his development. Young player, so he's looking to Chris Davis, that's his name. He's looking to kind of get a foothold on this team. I think that's pretty cool to see that. He says in Calgary, arriving at the hotel, he was meted. I lost my spot here. In Calgary, arriving at the hotel, trio wearing Ticats jerseys invited us to their tailgate. He saw Chad Owens coming off the elevator and looking at the sign and saying, "What the hell? Where is my room?" Apparently, Owens didn't realize the hotel had two towers and he ended up in the wrong one. That's pretty funny, I think. Tailgate outside the stadium was awesome. Scott Mitchell tweeted out a picture. But at its peak, there were over 50 Ticat fans there, which I think is a pretty good gathering in Calgary. Inside the stadium, there's apparently an usher who looked a lot like me. And actually, he tweeted out the photo, and I retweeted it. And yeah, it's one hell of a doppelganger. I'm going to have to sit down with my dad and ask him a few serious questions. The first being, have you ever been to Calgary? Because, yeah, if you go look on my timeline, you're going to see this picture. And holy smokes, does it look like me? The only insight I can add to the game that hasn't been written about and that the TV broadcast may not have added: for the majority of the first half, the Ticats were rotating receivers on nearly a play-by-play basis. The left gunner on the punt team was great, easily beat his man downfield and kept contained. It was either number 25, Chris Davis, or number 26. I don't believe the Ticats have a number 26, so I'm going to go on a limb and say it was Chris Davis, which is pretty cool. Again, newcomer making some plays and contributing on special teams. Like to hear that. Flight back may have been the most interesting part of the trip. At the airport, everyone kept clear of Kent Austin, was sitting about 15 feet away from him. By far, he looked the most upset about the loss. No question about it. Orlando Steinhauer is by far the best dressed person on the team. So Coach O apparently rocking some decent swag there. He also got a quote. I guess he talked to Brian Simmons, a guy that I am a big fan of. And Brian had to say that this was the biggest plane he'd ever been on in the CFL. Apparently it was a Boeing 767, but there were only about 40 rows of seats, two on either side and three in the middle. Offense was very quiet on the plane back, but the defensive players were talking trash the entire time boarding and during takeoff. Basically, Frederick Plessius and Rico Murray were on opposite sides of the plane chirping each other. Plessius was getting chirped about his shirt, which Murray and company described as a shirt Plessius got because he cut up his grandma's curtains. That is a great, great dig. Plessius described the shirt as, and this is a quote, one you can wear to school, work, and the club. The club line really got the guys laughing. Jay Lango was one of the nicer guys in the team, talking with a lot of people around him and giving away Timbits to anyone who wanted. So that is Adam's regaling of what happened with him on the plane ride to and from Calgary and at the game. I think that's pretty cool. I think there's some pretty funny stories in there. And any fans out there, any listeners to the show, if you guys get a chance to interact with players, please feel free. We will read your stories on the show, because this is the stuff that I think makes the CFL what it is, right, Mike?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the players are so approachable. You know, not every player is going to be a great guy. You know, that's not going to happen. But overall, you can approach the players and have a talk with them. You know, I've talked to Eskimos players at where I work. I see them quite often, and every guy I've talked to has been really nice. So yeah, that's one of the things that's special about the CFL. The players aren't standoffish for the most part.
For sure, for sure. Any interaction I've had with a CFL player has always been great. So I love hearing those stories. We hear so much about stupid stuff that happens with professional athletes. It's really nice to hear some of the good stories. And like I said, keep them coming. You got a story you want to tell? I'll be happy to read it, because I think these are awesome. What isn't awesome, though, Mike, is our embarrassing loss in the CFL podcast Family Fantasy League this week. We were a 6-3 team playing a 1-8 team, and we lost. We lost to the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. They took us down 190-170. They have the Hamilton quarterbacks, and as we will get into in our game review, Zach Caleros had a monster game. And I'll be honest, if we're going to lose, it's okay if the players on my actual favorite team are playing well, but this may be the one time I was hoping for Zach Caleros to not go out there and ball out like the all-star that he is. So now we sit in a four-way tie for first place at 6-4 with the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, the Two and Out podcast, and the Eskimo Empire podcast. So things are getting tight in this league, man. No one is running away with it. I believe 1-7... Rouge, White, and Blue is at 2-8, and I think they're the only ones who – I think everyone else is between 6-4 wins. So it's basically like the CFL East Division in this fantasy league. And our next game is against the BC Lions Den. We last played them in Week 4, took them down 199-147. They, I believe, are sitting at 4-6. We're at 6-4. They're still very much in the hunt. So I like those guys. I was just recently on the BC Lions Den podcast a couple weeks ago when the Ticats played the Lions. Love Brian, love Mojo, but this week they're the enemy. We got to take them down. We got to get back on those winning ways. We lost to a 1-8 team, Mike. This is unacceptable.
It's pretty embarrassing, but hopefully we'll bounce back this week and steal a win from the BC boys.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. So let's put the fantasy stuff behind us and let's get into this Ticats game that we saw on Sunday night. Unfortunately, our boys fell 30-26 to the Stamps in what I have described as an error-filled contest. It is very clear that penalties and mistakes were the big takeaway from this game. But before we get into that, I want to ask you a simple question. This was the live mic game. We did not know this when we recorded last week, but the CFL mic'd up Zach Caleros, Bo Levi Mitchell, Dave Dickinson, and Ken Austin for this game. Simple question, Mike. What'd you think of this? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Did you like some of it? Did you like a little bit of it? What were your feelings on the live mic game?
I thought it was pretty cool to hear the quarterbacks in the huddle and all that, but I was kind of disappointed I didn't hear Kent Austin like at all during the game. It was all the coaches. It was all Dave Dickinson. I don't know if Austin just didn't say much that game, or like his language was too vulgar or something. But I don't think that was the problem. But I was disappointed that you didn't hear more of Austin, because I was very curious to hear what he said during the game.
Yeah, I think going into it, everyone had this assumption that you'd be hearing a lot of bleeps or stuff from Ken Austin, but I've been told from some people that sit behind the bench at Ticats games that he's not much of a cursor on the field. He's more of a give you a stern look kind of guy, so maybe he just doesn't talk all that much. My big thing with this, my takeaway was, I thought it was some aspects were cool. My main example is, I believe it was the first drive of the game, Zach Caleros throws an incomplete pass, and he goes, and all you hear is him go, challenge it, challenge it, challenge it, about, I believe it was Brandon Banks, was illegally contacted in the end zone. And I thought that showed a really cool dynamic between the quarterback and the head coach, and the trust that the head coach has in the quarterback, and I thought that was kind of neat. The one thing I could have done without, and I think this might be the one thing that the Ticats in the lead up to this, apparently they were against the idea of miking themselves up, and I think that was because they were giving away plays. I know it's probably not a big deal because every team run. I can't see gaining too much of a competitive advantage for teams they'll play in the future. But they were in the huddle and you could hear them make the play calls, and it was kind of cool at first. But then, to be honest with you, as a layman fan and as the casual fan, we don't know what the hell they're talking about anyway. Some people do, and to those people, this might have been one of the coolest things about it. But for me, as a guy who I'm a pretty hardcore fan, but I don't know the minutia of playbook lingo, this to me was kind of something that I could have done without. I wanted to hear more of like the interactions on the sidelines or the coach quarterback talking stuff like that. So if they do this in the future, and I think they will, because apparently the ratings for this were out of this world. Apparently the peak audience was like 2.4 million people, which is fantastic for an August mid-season CFL game.
Yeah, that's like a Western Final type ratings, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So for this game to get that high of ratings, clearly there was interest in the general public in this idea. I think going forward, maybe they could take out sort of that stuff and try to maybe mic up a few more players so you can hear them interacting with one another. I feel like this was a good first step, and I applaud the CFL for doing something outside the box. But I think going forward, there could be some tweaks here that I think could make this a really great addition to the game broadcast.
Yeah, they could do it. I think it would be more interesting on defensive players because they seem to talk a lot of smack. Not all of them, but generally you see the, you know, for example, Simone Lawrence. If he was mic'd up, now that would be pretty interesting. I don't know how much they could play on TV, but yeah, the quarterbacks, they didn't really say much. They just called the play, and then that was about it. But yeah, I think they could tweak it a bit, and it could be really interesting stuff, and maybe drum up some better ratings for the league. After time, though, if they keep doing this, the interest might fall off. But they could tinker with it a bit and improve the idea.
Yeah, I would have thought that maybe the best time to do this is in one of those preseason games that TSN airs, because I think that would be a boon to ratings there. You could mic up a bunch of guys, maybe guys that are on the roster bubble or guys that are trying to make a team that are older. Like, I think that there's a way to do this, I think, that alleviates all the worries of that, say, the Ticats had with competitive imbalance and stuff like that, but still make it where it's something that's unique and fresh. And because I'm with you, if they do it too often, it just becomes a regular thing. If they have to be very sparingly with it. I think the preseason might be an interesting time to try it, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, preseason football, yes, I'll watch it, but sometimes it's pretty tough to watch and gain interest in a preseason game, even if it's your team. I mean, the football is so bad. Any league, CFL, NFL, preseason football is pretty terrible to watch usually.
Okay, so let's get into the things that happened in this game. I want to start with the positives because the Ticats did lose this game by 4. Again, another close loss in Calgary. It seems to be that's exactly what happens. But we got to start. I want to start with some good stuff, then we'll get into some bad stuff. Where do we start? Zach Collaros. Holy smokes. This guy, Rust, what Rust? 439 yards passing and 3 touchdowns. He's played 3 games this year, Mike, and he has 1,151 yards, 10 TDs, and 1 interception. I know it's not to prorate stats is kind of silly, but it's also kind of fun. Over a full 18-game season, the numbers that he's put up in these first three, he would throw for 6,906 yards, 60 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. Obviously, this pace cannot keep up over a full season, but if he comes even close to maintaining this pace, he actually might win MOP even though he missed the first 6 weeks. This guy's been outstanding since he's been back. What more can we say about him, honestly?
Yeah, and the precedent was set a couple years ago. When Ricky Ray played 10 or 11 games and won MLB. So it's not really the realm of possibility that Zach Collaros could be a candidate. Now I think that Riley and Bo Levi Mitchell are, they've been in the whole year and have accumulated big numbers already, and one of them will probably win the award, even though it's only halfway through the season. But yeah, he's been spectacular. He's, the first half of the first game was a little rusty, and then since then he's been pretty much on fire. So this guy is, he's just one of the best in the league. And if he keeps going this way, the Ticats are going to win some games. But this was a tough one to swallow because, once again, we lose a close one in Calgary.
Yeah, I'm with you on Riley or Mitchell probably winning MOP. Riley is so far ahead of everyone when it comes to passing yards that he's not going to be caught. But Caleros is fifth in the league already in touchdown passes, just six behind Mike Riley, who leads it with 16. Maybe it'll take a bit much. It'll take probably, you know, if Edmonton goes 9-9, 8-10, and the Ticats go on a run here and win the East Division, 11, 12 wins, I could see voters switching over to Caleros, even though Riley's numbers are going to be great. Speaking of great numbers, Terrence freaking Tolliver, man, another massive game. 9 catches for 183 yards, some of them of the spectacular variety, and he scored 2 touchdowns, the first of which was an absolutely beautiful throw and catch from Caleros Tolliver. This guy has stepped up big time since Zach Caleros has come back, and it just seems like the sky's the limit for Terrence Tolliver.
Yeah, ever since, I'm not sure. Did he come back before Caleros was back?
His first game back was with Mazzoli. He had 100 and something yards in that game. But since Caleros is back, he's got a touchdown in each. He's got 4 TDs in the 3 games that Caleros has been there. And I believe now he's up to over 500 and something yards receiving. He's on pace for 1,000 yards. He was good in that first game back with Mazzoli, but he's been on another level since Zach came back.
Yeah, they've seemed to have quite the connection going on. I mean, especially this game we're talking about, he was just, you know, he was the number one guy out there. And I think he has the talent to be a number one receiver in the CFL. He's playing with a lot of talented guys in Hamilton, and he's standing out. So I'm pumped to see what he can do the rest of the season and if he can keep up this pace, because if he can, he's going to be one of the best in the league.
Yeah, speaking of best in the league, Luke Tasker, 10 catches for 100 yards, had a touchdown, had a 2-point convert. The other big receivers, Chad Owens, Andy Fantuz, slightly less spectacular games, although Owens had that big catch and run that a couple years ago would have gone for a score, but a little older now, he got caught from behind. Yeah. All deference to the big two that Edmonton has, Darrell Walker and Adarius Bowman, and that foursome out in Ottawa. But you could very easily make a case that the Hamilton Tiger Cats 1-4 and throw in Brandon Banks in on the occasional play might have the most dangerous receiving core in the CFL. This is with Tasker and Fantuz over the middle, Terrence Tolliver is a deep threat, and Chad Owens. I wouldn't trade these guys for anything, to be perfectly honest.
No, and even Spencer Watt, you know, he's not getting a lot of balls thrown his way, but I think he's a talented guy and can make some plays. He's a speedy dude, and I think he could be added to that list as well. And he, you know, he's playing that wide side receiver, the X receiver, I believe it is. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I have no freaking idea how those receivers are. I always figure it out, and then about 30 seconds later, completely forgot.
It's either the X or the Y receiver, I'm not sure, but he's just not getting, you know, a lot of balls thrown his way, but I think he's a talented guy to add to that receiving corps. And like we heard today, there's another guy coming in and someone else that was released, but we'll get into that. But yeah, I couldn't be happier with who we have with receivers on this team. They're a talented bunch.
All right, so now I think we got to get into some of the negatives here. This is going to sound weird because the offensive line didn't allow any sacks in this game.
I was going to talk about the offensive line.
But I felt like Caleros was pressured quite a bit.
Yeah.
I feel like they got there a lot, and I think that's part of why Caleros' completion percentage was so low. Like 64.2% used to be an amazing completion percentage, but now we're seeing guys hit 70, 75, and then there's Trevor Harris out in Ottawa who's like at a above 80% clip, which is incredible. 64% is not so good anymore. And I think that had to do with the offensive line was good in not allowing the sacks, but I think they allowed too much pressure. Your thoughts?
I think it's been going on for a while. Like, it just seems that Caleros is moving around, like, not on every play, but on a lot of the plays. The pocket is collapsing a lot, and it's disrupting this offense. Plain and simple, the offensive line needs to be better. Yes, they didn't give up any sacks, but this is the second game in a row where Caleros was just nailed from the blind side, and we just can't allow that to happen. It's just unacceptable. This offensive line needs to step up and be better, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, absolutely. The main thing about this game, though, that just ticked me off was the penalties. There was just too many damn penalties. This team, and this is not just offensively, this is on the whole. I think this is the story of the game, because I think they were flagged 14 times for 125 yards. They had 2 touchdowns on that first drive, wiped off the board as C.J. Gable run and Andy Fantu's TD. Luckily, the Ticats still managed to score on the Terrence Tolliver catch, but teams that get touchdowns taken off the board, I find this is completely just a off the top of my head thing that I think you lose more of the games when you get a TD taken away. And my biggest problem is many of these penalties were of the undisciplined variety. Simone Lawrence, who I could just feel during that early part of the game was going to get an objectionable conduct penalty, and then he did. And then there was DJ Hunter lining up offside on a punt. And that's when Brandon Banks busted the big one, like 45, 50 yards that would have set the Ticats up deep in Calgary territory. These are those things that you just cannot do. If this team would have cut the penalties down to maybe 7, they probably win this football game, no?
I have to say so. They're really shooting themselves in the foot with these undisciplined penalties. It's just very frustrating as a fan to watch. And I'm sure Austin is preaching it at every practice, every time he can. We have to cut down the penalties. But it's just not translating on the field. They're just doing way too much, and it's costing the team wins. Especially in this one. I mean, you could point to penalties being the main reason why this team lost the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll do credit to Calgary. They are 7-1-1, and they are a great football team. But the Ticats hurt themselves, I think, more than Calgary beat them. And that's not in any way meant to be an insult to the Calgary Stampeders. I have as much respect for them as any team in this league. But this was a game the Ticats could have won if they would have been smarter. And I don't say that often. You win in this league, you lose in this league, and it's because of the team that beat you. But in this one, it just feels like if the Ticats would have had their head screwed on right, they could have finally ended that losing streak in Calgary and finally ended this losing streak against the Stamps, period.
Yeah, and it seems across the league, penalties are down. I'm not positive about that, but it just seems that way watching games the last couple of weeks. I don't see as many flags going on, and the Ticats are increasing the flags against them. So it needs to stop starting next week. Toronto's a tough opponent with Ray back, and they're not gonna win games with 10 plus penalties each game.
All right, Mike, you were tasked with coming up with some stuff to talk about on the defensive side of the ball. What do you got this week?
Well, they didn't have a terrible, terrible game, but Calgary had some big plays that played to Daniels, the newcomer from Notre Dame. He had that huge catch and run for the touchdown, 76 yards, right after we had that long touchdown drive where we spent like 10 minutes, 20 minutes in the red zone, and they come right back with that long pass. I'm not sure who was covering him. It might have been Chris Davis.
I think you're right. I think it was Chris Davis. I think you're right.
So he got beat deep, and no sacks in the game. Calgary didn't have any either, but it didn't seem like Bo Levi Mitchell was pressured a whole bunch. So we need those front four. Like we talked about it in the game preview, that the front four need to get pressure, and it just didn't happen. And Bo Levi Mitchell kind of picked the defense apart. You know, not as good as numbers as Claros had, but 323 yards in the air, a touchdown, and a 73% completion percentage. So, they also need to be better, just like the offensive line.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Overall, I didn't think the defense played too poorly. I agree with you, though. The lack of pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell is another reason the Ticats did not win this football game. He didn't have the type of time he's used to having back there, but he wasn't pressured a whole heck of a lot. There were a couple times when he had to roll out, but when he did, he made plays, and that's why he's one of the best quarterbacks in this league. But yeah, I just feel like maybe the negative aspects of the defense is just these were two, I think, good teams. I think these are two evenly matched teams, regardless of the record. I think we're going to see, as we've seen most of the time that these two teams have met since Zach Caleros has been the starting quarterback for the Ticats, these games are not blowouts by any stretch of the imagination. These are always one-score games, or maybe a little, you know what I mean? I don't have much to say about the defense. If you got more, keep going. But I just feel like they had a very nondescript, very ho-hum, very meh type game. They didn't do anything to really hurt the team, but they also didn't do anything to help the team win.
Yeah, one positive thing was the run stop. I mean, stopping the run with Jerome Messam. He had 14 carries, 46 yards, 3.3-yard average. That's pretty good. He's one of the best in the league. And if he gets that ball that much, usually he racks up a lot of yards. And the Ticats defense really held him in check. He had a touchdown, but overall, I mean, a 3.3-yard average for Jerome Messam is pretty small potatoes.
Yeah, I'll take that. If I'm playing against Jerome Messam, I'm a defense, I'll take 3.3 yards per carry out of him every week. You know what else they kind of did? This just kind of dawned on me, and it kind of sucks that it happened so late in the game. They forced Calgary into a lot of two and outs when they had to. If they would have done that earlier and not allowed the Stamps to march, they might have won this football game too. But when the Ticats got down, I believe it was 27-10, and they made that comeback to get it to 27-24, it was not just the offense that was efficient, it was the defense. It was two and out, two and out, two and out. Again, too little, too late, though. And it just seems that this team always, they have to get down. Either they're going to blow teams out, or they have to get down in order to make a comeback. It's just, I don't know, it can be very frustrating to watch sometimes.
Yeah, if the defense would just play that way, I know it's hard. You can't completely stop teams, but if they could have some of that second half magic in the first half, then, you know, it would be a closer game and we wouldn't have to make these comebacks and make it so nail-biting all the time. So, you know, a little bit more consistency from the defense would really help out this team, I think.
For sure, for sure. Special teams, for me, I didn't think Brett Maher had a very good day against the Stampeders. First punt of the game was blocked. He had the punt that went out of bounds. He had the terrible onside kick. He did make his lone field goal of the game to extend his streak to 17 consecutive makes. But overall, I think he had a pretty piss poor game.
Yeah, not the greatest performance by him, that's for sure. He we can't complain about him too much because he's been so good all year. But yeah, he just didn't really, that onside kick, I didn't think that we'd get the ball back. I was kind of, you know, I thought this game was over, but to kick it out of bounds and not even give the cover team a chance to get the ball was a big mistake on his part. So, yeah, not his best game. I hope he has a bounce back game against the Argos next week.
Yeah, the kicking out of bounds is kind of like on a third down with the game on the line. You have to pick up the first down to win the game, and the quarterback takes a sack instead of just throwing it up somewhere, interception. Like, even if it's intercepted, at least you threw it up and gave your guys a chance. That's kind of what the kick in the ball out of bounds kind of looked like to me. It was just, you didn't even give the team an opportunity to make a play. It's very low likelihood that they were going to recover the onside kick, but at least if it would have landed in bounds, there would have been a chance.
Yeah, for sure. And I was just looking at the punting numbers, and then I see Fan 2's had a punt, and I remember what play it is now. And I don't like that that play. I've never seen it work before in my life. I don't really know why teams do it. The onside punt play. It just, every time I've seen it performed, I don't see any players getting close to the ball. It's just, I don't know. I'd rather see them do a short pass and then just keep lateraling it back and see what happens there. I don't like that onside punt play at all.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to get some hate mail about that one, because that's like an only in the CFL type thing that happens. And you know how people can get about like the rouge and no yards and things like that when people criticize it. It is what it is. I like you. I don't think it's very successful. I'm sure if it has been, someone will chime in and make us know that we're idiots and wrong. But yeah, it is what it is. And like you, it hasn't, I don't think I've seen it be successful either. But yeah, you're gonna get some hate for that. There's another thing. So the roughing the passer call on Adrian Tracy, do you remember it?
I'm drawing a blank here.
Mitchell threw the pass. I can't remember what the outcome of the play was. And Tracy kind of bumped into him. And I'm not one to complain about hitting the quarterback. I know the rules. You hit him in the head, it's a penalty. You hit him after throw the ball, it's a penalty. And I'm not going to say that this was like the refs are out to get us or any junk like that. But this call was really, in a game that had a lot of ticky-tacky calls, I felt like this one was pretty ticky-tacky as well. It didn't really seem, it more felt like Tracy led up and tried not to hit Mitchell, but he did hit him. So I understand why the call was made. I just didn't necessarily like it. And of course, I think we have to talk about challenges again. Legal contact helped extend two Hamilton touchdown drives, one of which erased 115-yard interception return by the Stampeders. People are up in arms that these plays are being challenged and are being corrected. And while a flag's a flag, and those were both illegal contact penalties, at some point, I don't know, they went in our favor, so you take it. But imagine if a Grey Cup ended or was decided on something like this. I think people would be pretty furious. What's kind of your feelings on the illegal contact penalty being challengeable? Because it sure seems... like fans are starting to say this has to go.
Yeah, I don't like it. Maybe when it first came out, the idea of it was, intriguing to me, but it's just, you know, the calls that they're making, even on our team, I'm just like, oh, that's so borderline, like, tug a jersey a little bit. You're not even, like, slowing the guy down, and it's legal contact. And listen, keep illegal contact in, you know, the 5 yards, you can't touch the guy after 5 yards, but I don't think it should be a reviewable play, because these plays are just coming away from the actual play where the ball goes, and it doesn't have any merit on the play, and it's just not – I don't like it. I think they should get rid of it in the offseason and just keep pass interference reviewable, not illegal contact.
Now, I will say the one on Brandon Banks, the first one that extended the first Ticats TD drive, Zach Caleros was very clearly looking at Brandon Banks. You can actually – if you go back and watch the replays, you can see that was his primary target on that. So for that – for that incident to happen there, I think that corrected a call that should have been, because it seems to be that fans are upset that penalties that are happening away from the play are impacting the game and are being challengeable and are being reviewed, and they don't like that. I understand that, but at the same time, if penalties that didn't impact plays were no longer something that we worried about, Brandon Banks is a Grey Cup MVP and the Tiger Cats would have won the Grey Cup in 2014. I agree, and we said this on the show, I think it was the very first episode we ever did, the penalty on Taylor Reed was legit. The thing is that did not affect Brandon Banks' ability to score that touchdown. So if we're going to sit here, what, 2 years later almost, year and a half later, and talk about, well, if it occurs away from the play, then it shouldn't really be called, well, then can we go back in time and get our Grey Cup victory back? I'd really like that.
I would like to have a Grey Cup champion's hat or t-shirt, you know? But, I think it's gone too far, and it needs to be looked at in the offseason for sure.
Yeah, and I do think it will be. So the Ticats have now extended their losing streak in Calgary to 12 games and their overall losing streak to Calgary to 10 games. They won't get a shot to break that Calgary streak until next year, but they do get a chance to end the 10-game slide when these two teams meet at Tim Hortons Field on October 1st. And I don't normally do this, but I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. And you can hold me to this come our show leading into the October 1st game. The Hamilton Tiger Cats are going to beat the Calgary Stampeders when these two teams meet again. I just have a feeling the last time these guys met at Tim Hortons Field, Zach Caleros did not play, and the Ticats lost by just 3. Caleros in there at home that late in the season when I think the Ticats are going to have found their footing and I think they're going to be going on a run. I think the Ticats are going to beat the Stamps and then that end that losing streak. And I'm going to make that pick here, and I'm going to remember that pick come October. I'm going with the Ticats in that one.
All right. I don't know if this team matches up with the best teams in the league. I'm not sure of it anymore. I think that, you know, we have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but is there talent on both sides of the ball to be a championship team? I'm not sure anymore. I'm really questioning it. And I just don't know anymore. Honestly, that loss really beat me down. Just all the penalties and the offensive line not giving up sacks, but just the way they collapse all the time. It's really starting to bother me, and I'm not sure if this team is up with the elite teams in the league anymore.
I feel the exact opposite. I think this game showed me that if they play their game and they don't beat themselves, they can compete with any team in this league. It's funny how we have different reactions to this game.
Yeah, it's just I watched the BC game, and I was getting so frustrated that they couldn't stop the offense in the first half. It was just like it just looked easy for them, and I kind of saw that in this game as well. Maybe if they cut down on the mistakes, they can be one of the best teams in the league. But right now, I just don't see it.
So who do you rank up there as the best teams in the league? Is it just Calgary and BC? Do you throw Ottawa in there? Is it just Toronto? Like, I'm just curious as to who you see as the league's elite right now.
I see Calgary. I know Edmonton has had its problems on defense, but I think that they're fixing that. And I don't know if Ottawa, I don't know any team in the East is really an elite team right now. You know, Toronto is questionable. Ottawa, not sure. Montreal, no. Hamilton, maybe. There's a lot of parity this year, but I'm not ready to put Hamilton up there in the top two or three.
Oh, I don't think they're in the top two or three right now. But with the way the schedule plays out, the Ticats, out of the ones that you consider elite teams, they only have Calgary and Edmonton left on their schedule. And they get them both at home.
Yeah.
They've already beat the Eskimos once. They don't see the Bombers again. They don't see the Lions again. So any other matchup with those two teams wouldn't happen until a potential Grey Cup matchup. So do you then think that maybe we're not going to know until maybe a Grey Cup appearance if this team is really that good? And if they get to the Grey Cup, I'm not really going to care, to be honest with you.
It's I could see them making it there and then losing, maybe in a close one, but I don't know. I just don't see them beating the best in the West. And I hope I'm wrong, but I'm just kind of being a negative Nancy right now. But I'm kind of down on the team right now.
No, that's perfectly acceptable. You have your reasons. I'm on the more positive side, and I think this team is going to start gelling in the second half. I think they have a very, very favorable schedule. They don't leave this province now, except for once when they go to Saskatchewan, and going into Saskatchewan is tough, but this Riders team is not very good. I legitimately see this team sitting at 4-5 right now. They could go on a pretty decent run to end this season, and maybe by the time we get to November, maybe your tune will have changed.
I really hope so. I still have faith, but it's just been questioned a bit in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and I think the rest of the East being kind of just in the same boat as the Ticats right now really helps this team. Ottawa's not running away with anything, and if anything, they are falling back. They are 1-4 in their last five. You have the Argos who are getting Ray back, but who knows for how long. That guy's been injury bitten for how many years now? And the Owls look like they're, one game they look great, next game they look terrible. So I don't know. I think this division is anyone's for the taking. I think the Ticats have as good a chance as anyone as coming out on top in the East.
Yeah, I agree with you there, for
And
sure.
once you get to the Grey Cup, it's one game. You never know
Anything,
what can happen. Anything can
yeah,
happen.
anything could happen. There could be crazy weather on the lake at BMO Field. You're right. Anything can happen in a one game playoff type Grey Cup game. So yeah, you never know. I'm just hopefully they have a big they kill the Argos next week and get my faith back up again.
All right, but we're getting way ahead of ourselves. There's still lots of football left to be played. But Chad Owens jersey watch time, Mike. Four catches for 67 yards in this game puts him at 43 catches for 596 yards and four touchdowns in the season. That projects to 86 catches for 1,192 yards and eight TDs. So we're still on pace for me to buy that damn shirt. Ticats news, then, Mike. Let's get into some of that. There was a lot of Ticats news. Last week we had next to none. This week we got more than we can handle. Ticats made a slew of roster moves over the last few days. They signed wide receiver Tommy Streeter. He was a sixth-round pick of the Baltimore Ravens in 2012, and he spent time with the Bills, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Miami Dolphins. He went to the U, the University of Miami, and he is a speedy player. He ran a 4.4 at the NFL Combine. To
And a
make,
big,
yep.
like he's got size and speed. So, that doesn't always equate to a great pro career, but the potential's there.
Absolutely. So to make room for him, they released a few players. DB Quinton Pointer and defensive lineman Terry Redden were released as Streeter was signed. Pointer, you'll remember, played a few games for the team earlier this year. He was replaced by Brandon Sermons last week. And then almost immediately, Pointer was picked up and signed by the Toronto Argonauts. Redden was signed by the team in April and never saw the field. So not a whole heck of a lot lost here. I think Pointer just lost his job essentially to Sermons. And was very quick to find his feet. But the big release that came out of this was the Ticats let go Tyquan Underwood. When Streeter was signed, it was expected that he would sort of compete with Terrence Tolliver and Tyquan Underwood for a spot on this team very easily. Terrence Tolliver is not coming off the field anytime soon. I think that made Tyquan Underwood expendable. It's a shame because I think he really kind of adapted to the CFL well, and he was an NFL guy. Played in a lot of games in the NFL, but he kind of accepted the CFL and became one of those players we talked about earlier that would interact with fans and had a great relationship with fans. It's tough to see guys like that go, but obviously his play on the field is the reason that he is no longer on this team. I think we'll all go back to the big touchdown drop against the Bombers that could have won the Ticats that game as kind of maybe the play that sealed his fate.
Yeah, I'd have to say I'd agree with that. He filled in for Tolliver for a bit and was average at best. I think he's a talented guy. I think he could play somewhere else, but it just wasn't in the cards for him to stay with the Ticats with all the talent that they have already on the team, and then new guys that they can bring in to take a look at.
Another new guy they brought in. This shocked me. This just happened earlier today. The team has reportedly signed former Riders and Argos receiver John Chiles. There's been nothing official from the team, but Chiles posted a picture on his Instagram of a Ticats helmet with "crossed over to the other side, and I didn't even have to die" as the caption of the of the photo. I'm really surprised by this move. I don't know where he necessarily fits in on this team. I think they have their American receivers set. So I don't know if maybe this is just, let's see what he still has left in him, because I thought he was a great receiver with the Argos a few years ago. And if I recall, we both kind of were talking about him when he was a free agent last year, going into the 2015 season, of maybe being someone the Ticats could target before he ended up signing in the NFL. So what do you think of this move that John Chiles is apparently now a Hamilton Tiger Cat?
I agree that it's surprising with all the talent that they have receivers-wise. And, I'm not sure where he fits in either. I thought that maybe he could get a better opportunity, a starting opportunity somewhere else. But, you know, I was pretty high on him when he came back to the Riders. I drafted him in our league, in our fantasy league. It didn't really work out for me. But I think that he's a really talented dude. I liked him when he was in Toronto, as you did. And I think that he can still contribute to a team and be, you know, a really good receiver. So I'm not sure if we're going to see that in Hamilton or not, but it's an interesting signing for sure.
Yeah, it really adds to the depth of this receiving core. And if you know, knock on wood, one of our big American guys, Tasker or Owens or even Tolliver, were to get hurt, having a guy like John Chiles there ready to fill in is not exactly the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he got released from the Riders. He was one of their big offseason signings, and a lot of people were expecting big things from him coming back to the CFL, and it just, you know, the Riders are a bad team, and he didn't put up big numbers. So, you know, the Riders released him, and it's a new opportunity for him to put on a new uniform on a winning team, or actually not a winning team, a losing team right now, but a better team than the Riders.
A team that will more than likely make the playoffs at least.
Yeah, for sure.
This is not the only Ticats receiver news, as earlier today we found out that the Minnesota Vikings waived receiver Terrell Sinkfield. This coupled with the, so the Sinkfield release happened first, and then the Chiles signing happened, and when Sinkfield was released, the first thing I came to my mind is, I don't know where he fits on this team. I would love to see him back in Hamilton. He really, really turned it on last year, became a much more solid contributor to the receiving core. He was just, he kind of became a better receiver as the year went on, finished with 1,000 yards, obviously got an opportunity to try out for the Minnesota Vikings. It didn't work. Couple that with the Chiles signings, I think if Terrell Sinkfield does decide to come back to the CFL, I do not think it's going to be in our colors, Mike.
I don't think so either. I mean, who's he gonna replace? Is he gonna take Owen's spot? Is he gonna take Fantuz? Is he gonna replace Tolliver? Tasker? No. I don't see him starting on this team. I could see him signing somewhere else, maybe with the Argos, because it seems that every time the Ticats get rid of a player, the Argos pick him up. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him with the Argos again, or not again, but
he was with the Argos before.
Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, maybe he goes back to the Argos.
I seem to recall there was some bad blood with his release, so I'm not sure if he was to go back there. If I had to, and this is just a complete shot in the dark, I wouldn't be surprised if Saskatchewan makes a play. He's a young guy, still has a ton of talent, still has a ton of potential ahead of him, too. I think that Saskatchewan would look at this guy maybe as a guy that could anchor their receiving core. Naaman Roosevelt has been great. Caleb Hawley has come on. We've seen Ricky Collins Jr. kind of slide a little bit. I think Terrell Sinkfield would make a great addition to their receiving core. And really, if you look anywhere else, Montreal doesn't really have a spot for him. Ottawa definitely doesn't have a spot for him. Toronto, the history there, I don't know. Calgary doesn't really tend to bring guys like this in. Edmonton's already got those two studs, although maybe they bring in Sinkfield, work him in this year, because they're probably going to lose Darrell Walker to the NFL after this season's over. Yeah. I don't know. I think Saskatchewan just kind of makes sense. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe he still gets another NFL opportunity, but if he comes back to the CFL, I would be floored if he was back with the Ticats.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it in the cards either. But I'm just mad that they're under 500. I'm really mad about this.
Okay, like, well,
with all the talents on this team and the coaching staff and all that, they just shouldn't be. They should not be under 500. Midway point of the season. I'm very upset about this.
Okay, well, let's look at their schedule coming up, Mike. You're clearly very disturbed by this. It's really ticking you off.
Yeah.
Argos, Owls, Riders. They should win at least three of those four games. So when we hit October, when we finally get that rematch, well, I'm sounding like a freaking Buffalo. When we finally get that rematch with the Stampeders, This team at worst should have 7 wins. So they should be over 500. I think they will be over. I don't think there's any chance they lose to the Argos on Labor Day. I don't think there's any chance the Owls come in here and beat them. And as much as I think the Riders are going to win some games eventually, they're not going to be. They're just not good enough to stop a Zach Caleros-led Ticats team. They just aren't. Period. Yeah. Point blank. So they will win 3 of those games. They might even win all 4. If we get to that rematch with the Stamps and this team is sitting at 8-5, will you calm the f*** down?
Yes, if we're 8-5, will make me a very happy person. I at least want to be 11-7 when the regular season ends. Okay, that's what I want. That's what I really want. I want that.
Oh, that might be asking for a lot, but I think this team can get there. So, okay, 11-7, guys. You've been challenged by Mike to get to 11-7. Yeah. Speaking of challenges, that's where we go next. We got some CFL news to talk about quickly. League did an about face, and they changed the challenge system mid-year. You don't normally see this in football, so I got to give them a big pat on the back for noticing that there's a problem and making changes. Not necessarily maybe the changes we want, but now, apparently, this is going to be going forward. No more freebie challenges, quote-unquote freebie challenges. If you lose your first challenge, you lose your timeout. Simple as that. I'm a little surprised they made the change mid-season. I'm even more surprised that they made it mid-week. The new rules didn't apply in that BC Ottawa game earlier. I feel like maybe that, again, I don't think it changed a whole heck of a lot. I think we still saw challenges by teams at a similar rate than we saw before the changes were made. Maybe they're just being a little more judicial in not trying for those Hail Mary challenges that we called them earlier. But what do you think? Do you think the league's listening to fans and making these changes? Do you think we might see more during the season? Or do you think this is it, and then we'll get those new ones, maybe the illegal contact coming out back in the offseason?
Well, I think it's great. I didn't expect it to happen until after the season, but yeah, they're listening. I think they know what the fans are talking about, and they can't make huge drastic changes, but this is going to improve the flow of the game and all that. It's not exactly what the fans are clamoring for, getting rid of the illegal contact and all that, but it's a step in the right direction, and I commend them for doing it, even though it's midway through the season. So I think it's great.
All right, well, that's good to hear. What I don't think was great is what the Argos did to Keon Raymond last week in releasing him. This guy, for crying out loud, the week before, 30 seconds into the game, he had a pick six. This guy has been absolutely outstanding for the Argos, and they cut him out of nowhere, and apparently it was simply to avoid guaranteeing his contract as a veteran player. After 9 games, his contract would have become guaranteed. This was all a cap move. And I understand guys get cut as cap casualties all the time. Rarely do you see it in the middle of the season. Have the Argos really screwed up their cap that much that they're going to take a player who maybe has been their best player on defense and let him go? Moves like this, I think, shows a little bit of the ugly side of both professional football and non-guaranteed contracts and of the CFL in general. I don't think you would see this type of move in the NFL. I can't condone this, but Keon Raymond is still sitting at home waiting for a call from some team, but someone's going to get this guy. He's going to be A, heavily motivated, and B, he's going to show out and ball out, and good for him. I just don't like this move. It kind of sickens me a little bit.
I mean, why would they even bother, bringing in the guy, give him a contract, he performs well, and then you cut him because you don't want to pay him? Didn't you bring him in for him to perform well for your team and contribute to the defense? And, they have a young defensive backfield in Toronto, and he was a veteran guy. It's a bit shocking because I've heard that Stuber's very loyal to the veteran players, and this just doesn't make sense that Stuber would be in agreement to letting a guy like Keon Raymond go that he's had in Calgary for years. So it was a big shocker to me.
Well, that's just it. It'd be one thing if he was underperforming or if he stunk. Like, the talk right now is Drew Willey. There's a possibility that he could be traded, that he could be cut, that he could be asked to reduce his salary. Well, that makes sense. He's been replaced in the starting lineup by someone else. I understand maybe getting rid of him and getting that salary off the books, but Raymond has been one of their best defensive players and one of their best players on any side of the ball, period. And like you said, they signed this guy with the expectation that he was going to perform well. He performs well, and he still gets told, we don't need you anymore. It's mind-boggling. And this really bothers me, because what else was this guy going to do? It's almost like he was signed under false pretenses. And I'm not saying the Argos did this on purpose or anything, but they brought him in with the expectation that he was going to play well. He plays well, but they still let him go. It doesn't make any sense. It just does not make any sense.
No, it doesn't. It's, oh God, I'm drawing a blank here. It's the defensive back that the Tigers brought in, and they let him go after like two games.
Jeff Tisdale?
Yeah, Tisdale. I mean, that's an example. They brought a guy in, he did not perform well, and they let him go. They bring Raymond in, he performs well, and they still let him go. So it's a big question mark to me, but I hope he signs somewhere else and really sticks it to the Argos in some way.
Yeah, I hope that somewhere else is here. I know the Ticats linebacking core is pretty good, but with Johnny Sears Jr. being hurt, Rico Murray has slid into that linebacking position that Raymond has played so well. You get Raymond in here, you push Rico back into the secondary, I think you make the secondary better, and you add a guy in Keon Raymond who really is going to want to stick it to the Argos. I don't know if it would work cap-wise. I don't, but on a pure fan and performance base, I would love to see Keon Raymond in black and gold.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against it for sure. He's a talented guy still. We saw that with the Argos, and he brings a veteran presence. So, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
All right, Mikey, it's everyone's favorite time of the week. Name your bozo. Who's your bozo of the week for this week, sir?
Well, I'm not going to say it was all the Red Blacks fan, but there was a couple bad apples that seemed to just be freaking out about after the BC-Ottawa game about the penalties and how they're done with the CFL, and you know they're glad that the NFL is starting, and they seem to be jumping ship, and I don't really understand that. I mean, there was very limited penalties in that game. They mentioned that the CFL game has been boring. I thought that this year the games have been really entertaining, most of them. You know, there's going to be stinkers here and there. In every league, there's stinkers. In every professional sport, there's going to be bad games. But overall, I think the entertainment value of the CFL has been way up this year. I think the offenses are producing more touchdowns, more yards. The quarterbacks are throwing, you know, there's going to be three or four, or maybe just three, I'm not sure, but there's going to be over five, you know, quarterbacks are going to be throwing for over 5,000 yards. Receivers are going to be getting more than 1,000 yards. There was only three last year, I think, and there could be in the double digits this year. So the offense is way up. The entertainment value is way up, so I don't understand what they're talking about there. But to, you know, I've watched Ticats games where I thought that they got screwed by the refs, and I'm not jumping the ship. You know, I'm not going to the NFL. You know, I love watching the NFL too, but I think you can like both leagues. And I think it's just a bit ridiculous to throw away your fandom because of one game. So the Ottawa fans that are doing that get my bozo of the week. And they're not, you know, there was a small minority of them doing that, but yeah, they get it for just being stupid.
It was a very small minority. And the problem is that some of the comments I saw were from guys who had proclaimed themselves to be diehard fans.
Yeah.
If you're 2.5 years into your fandom with the team and you're already saying, I'm not watching this and I'm done and I'm leaving, that worries me. As a fan of the CFL, we just got this team back, and fan support is something that they need. And honestly, if you watch that BC-Ottawa game, that was one of the best CFL games I have seen all season. Not ridiculously high scoring, but it was back and forth. It was close. Yeah, there were some penalty calls. The one that jumps out, it was the roughing the passer call that Buono challenged on Jonathan Jennings that the refs didn't see. The Ottawa defensive guy hit him in the helmet. I don't care if you lightly brush it. That is always going to be called and always should be called. You cannot hit the quarterback in the helmet. But if you're complaining about a CFL game being boring on the tail end of that, that's the contest that you're like, I'm bored with this, I'm done, then you know what? I don't normally say this. Go watch something else. The CFL is not for you, because that game to me was exciting. I had no horse in that race. I was a fan watching a game, and I don't have any love for the Ottawa Redblacks. They're a Ticats division rival, but that was just a fun game to watch, and I think as far as maybe an underrated game of the year candidate, because it's probably not going to get talked about, but that was a great football game. If that bored you, you just don't like football as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't think that the score needs to be 50-45 to be an entertaining game, and that was an example of it. It was I can't remember the exact score, but I believe both teams were in the 20s.
29-23, something along the lines. All I know is that it came down to the very end. Ottawa was driving at the very end to try to win the game, and I think it was only with, like, what, 30-something seconds left that Ottawa's final play ended the game and BC kneeled out. So, like, you get a game that's one score going down to the wire, and the team that has a chance to win is driving down the field to win the game. Like, what more can you ask for?
Mm-hmm. And like I just said, there wasn't a ton of points, but there was, long drives. You know, when the CFL game is boring is when there's two and outs and a punt. And that just wasn't happening in this game. So, yeah, I thought it was a very entertaining game, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, these two teams played maybe the worst game in CFL history a couple years ago. I think it was 5-4. There was a torrential downpour. It was brutal. This was not that.
No, definitely not. It was a fun game to watch, and limited penalties. So, you know, when there's 25, 30 penalties, it's tough to watch the CFL. But this wasn't one of those games, so I'm not sure what they're talking about.
All right, Mike. It's time. It's game preview time, and this is the big one. It's Labor Day, baby. It is Labor Day. I'm not one of those people who tend to – you always hear the CFL season doesn't really start until Labor Day. I understand the sentiment, but you get the wins when you can. If the Ticats were 9-0 going into this game, I'm not saying, oh, well, the season hasn't started yet. No. You take the wins whenever you can get them. It is hard to win in this league. But that does not diminish Labor Day in any way. This is – maybe the biggest regular season game every year, and I for one can't wait. There's a doubleheader here in Hamilton. We got McMaster and U of T playing at noon, and then we have this game at 6:30. There's a concert in between. I'm going to be going to both games. I am stupidly excited for this doubleheader that they're calling Football Day in Hamilton. I hope this becomes an annual tradition. I'm just so excited for Monday. I cannot wait. Ticats, Argos, it's going to be great stuff. Mike, you get the offense this week. What are you looking at from this team, hoping that they can do to win this football game and win another game on Labor Day?
To me, it's all about the offensive line. We talked about it earlier, and yes, they didn't give up any sacks last week, but the pocket there needs to be a nice pocket for Zach Claris to be calm, collective, go through his reads. Just give him time back there. The offensive line is the biggest thing in this game to me, because if the offensive line performs well, Zach's going to have a great game, guaranteed. The receivers are going to put up big numbers. Hell, maybe even CJ Gable will have a big game running the ball. But to me, it comes down to one thing, offensive line play.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think we've seen this team as a unit, this offensive line, play well enough to win football games. I think they've just been kind of up and down, I think is the best way to describe it. They weren't great against Calgary, even though, as we said, they did not allow a sack. But I think this game is where if they can gel, they got to gel. This is a very good, or at least a very highly paid, Argos defensive front. So if they're going to make some hay in this game, yeah, I think you're right. I think the big guys up front are going to have to do their job this week and keep Zach clean.
If that happens, then everything else falls into place.
All right, so defensively, I've got some stuff to talk about here. First and foremost, I think this goes without saying, even though we're going to say it, stop taking penalties. We talked about in the Calgary game. This looked to be cleared up. They didn't take very many against Saskatchewan, but maybe that's because they were playing Saskatchewan. 14 for 125. The Ticats ranked 6th in the league in penalties. The Argos are the best in the league when it comes to penalties. So the Argos don't take many. The Ticats take too many. Ticats take too many in this game. That is a recipe for disaster.
If they take too many penalties, they're going to lose the game. That's my opinion. And then they'll be 4-6, and I'll be crying next week on the podcast.
Oh, so we can't have that. We can't have that
at all. No, we can't have that happen.
I think the defense has got to make some plays. I'm not necessarily saying they have to get interceptions and touchdowns, but the thing is, when you're at home, the defense, that's when the crowd, when they're on defense, can make some noise. And with a packed house, this place it's already been announced that it's a sellout. We're just a little less than a week away. That means there's going to be some tickets released, some standing room only. Like this might be the biggest crowd this stadium has ever seen. They have to make plays on defense because that will get the crowd into it. The Argos won't know what hit them. So I'm not saying they have to, like I said, they don't have to score touchdowns. But if they can get some sacks or even just get some two and outs, they can really get the crowd behind them. And I think the ball will start rolling in Hamilton's favor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just pressure Ray, and he's not going to have a good game. It's It's a pretty simple formula, but that's just the truth about it. If Ray doesn't have time in the pocket, he's not a good quarterback. If he does, he's one of the best that we've ever seen. So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, he's not going to beat you with his feet. He's going to try to beat you with his arm and with his head. So if the Ticats defense can make some plays, they'll limit that ability. They can win this football game. Something else they need to limit, big plays. The Argos are a league worst when it comes to big plays. That is 20-plus yard runs and 30-plus yard passes. They only have 15 on the season. Yes, they played one fewer game than everybody else, but that's still, it was well down. I looked at the stats. They were well down on the number of big plays, even behind Saskatchewan. So if the Argos can make big plays, they're going to do well in this. The Ticats, though, they can stop them. The Hamilton is tied for the league best in limiting big plays with 20. So this is kind of a weakness for the Argos against the strength of the Ticats. So if those trends can continue, I think the Ticats can win this football game.
Yeah, and if they take away Brandon Whitaker, like, he doesn't scare me. I think that the Ticats can easily take away his running game. And if they do that, then Ray's going to have to pass it through the air and be more predictable than the offense. So, yeah, taking away Brandon Whitaker is a big important part of this game, I think, too.
I think you're absolutely correct in there. I didn't have that down, but you're 100% correct. If Whitaker can get going in a typical Whitaker fashion where he sees 15 to 20 touches a game, I think that's bad for the Ticats. Yeah. Last but definitely not least, I think this is actually pretty big. They need to get stops on second down. The Ticats are the third best at stopping teams on second down. Their 47.1% second down conversion is behind only Toronto's at 46.9 and BC's at 41.7. Offensively, though, the Argos are the second worst in converting second downs. They're at 44.9% behind only, surprise, surprise, the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So, again, this is an area that the Argos are weak in, going against an area that the Ticats have a strength in. If this trend continues, like I said about big plays, the Ticats will win this football game. Getting off the field on second down will be key.
And make them do that check down play that they love so much in Toronto. I mean, if they check it down to Brandon Whitaker, this defense will rally to the ball and they won't get first down. So if I was an Argos fan, that check down stuff all the time would kind of bother me because it doesn't work. I bet it works like 50% of the time. So if they can make them do that, I think that they're not going to get first downs on second down.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I don't know if you can tell in my voice, man, but I am really excited for this. I love the Labor Day Classic. It's maybe my favorite game non-playoff of the year, man. It's just this opening day and the playoffs. It gets my blood pumping, man.
Yeah, it's the one time of the year where I miss going to games, obviously in Hamilton. But when you see the crowd, when you're watching it on TV, you really miss going to those Labor Day Classics, I tell you. So I think that the crowd will be amped up for this game as they always are on Labor Day, and I expect the Ticats to win, and they should win, and I think they will.
Okay, well, then we might as well move on to our pick segment, sir. You pretty much made it clear who you're taking in the Monday night Labor Day Classic, but again, always, like we say every week, you can join our Pick'em group, and if you win, you can get a nice Ticats prize pack courtesy of myself. So, our top three sits after week number 10. There's a little bit of a change at the top. But number three sits your girlfriend, Christina Sithfit, with 3,909 points. Falling from the number one spot is yours truly. Not picking that Montreal game, I think, is going to come back to bite me in the ass come the end of the season. Instead of probably still being in first place because of that pick, I sit in second place with 4,628 points. And our new leader in the clubhouse is Cappy D with 4,844 points. So I am not happy with myself for falling from first down to second. But you, sir, you took a major tumble. You went from 12th to 19th. You now have 2,761 points. Seems like a long, long time ago that you were sitting atop the standings, eh?
I know. It just keeps getting worse, it seems. I was 1-3 this week, and that really hurt me. So, it's going to be a tough climb to get back up to top three territory because I'm quite a ways away from that right now.
Hey, it ain't over till it's over. And this week you have an extra opportunity. We got five games to pick from this week. And it all starts on Wednesday night as the BC Lions head to BMO Field to take on the Toronto Argonauts. Mike, who's your pick?
I got to go with BC. Toronto's just been terrible at home this year in front of their 12 fans. So, yeah, I think there might be, 10 fans that show up at this game because it's a Wednesday night. And they're going to be it's just not going to be pretty for the Argos, I don't think.
I'm with you. If you've noticed, when quarterbacks get hurt and come back this year, that first game back tends to be a bit of a dud. We had Zach Kolaros come back. Not a dud, but they lost that game. Trevor Harris's first game back just last week, Ottawa lost that game. Henry Burris's first game back after injury, lost that game. Ricky Ray is coming back for this game. I think if he can find his rhythm, they'll do well going forward. But in this one, you got to go with the Red Hot BC Lions. They're the surprise team, I think, of the league this year. And I don't care if this is in Toronto. They played in Ottawa last week. They stayed out east, so they did a lot of team bonding. So time difference isn't going to make a difference. I think the Lions take this one handily. Thursday night, we head to Montreal as the Ottawa Redblacks take on the Montreal Alouettes. Mike, who you got in this one?
I picked Ottawa. Trevor Harris was okay last week. He racks up these crazy percentages, but it doesn't seem like the team scores a lot of points. Percentages, I mean completion percentages, obviously. But I just don't know what the Alouettes are going to bring week to week. I mean, I could be wrong and the Alouettes could play one hell of a game, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Ottawa will win this one, even though they seem to be not so hot lately. Like you said, 1-4 in the last five games. So I still have to take Ottawa over a Montreal team that I just don't know how they're going to perform.
No Daron Carter for the Alouettes. No chance for the Alouettes. I thought Trevor Harris would look a lot rustier than he did. I thought it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. There were definitely some things I saw in that game that showed me that he wasn't 100%. Like, he wasn't the guy that we saw come in earlier in the season. But he shook that rust off against BC. I think Montreal is just a team you can't trust. And I like the Red Blacks to take this one as well. Sunday afternoon, Mosaic Stadium, Regina, Saskatchewan, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who have won 4 in a row, take on the 1-8 Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Mike, who you got in this one?
The Bombers have had a tough time in Saskatchewan on Labor Day throughout the years, but I just can't take the Riders. I mean, they're just not good enough to beat the Bombers, I don't think. The way that they've been playing lately, the way that Matt Nichols has been performing, I got to take the Bombers in this one.
Fortune favors the bold, Michael. I am doing something I didn't think I'd do. I am going to take the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in this game. I think this is those games, much like Labor Day Classics between Calgary and Edmonton and Toronto and Hamilton. This is a game where you throw the records out the window. I recall back in 1991, one of the Labor Day Classics I went to between Ticats and Argos when I was just a wee little lad. The Argos came in there. They were something like 6-2. The Ticats were 0-8, and the Ticats pounded the Argos. That's back when Dunnigan was quarterback and Rocket Ishmael was there. The Argos were going to win the Grey Cup that year. They finished with a 13-5 record. The Ticats were 3-15 that year. Hamilton absolutely destroyed them on Labor Day. I can see. I won't say that the Riders will destroy them, but I don't think the Riders are going to finish 1-17. I think this is where they get the second win of the season. I think they knock the Winnipeg Blue Bombers off, and it's just one of those games where I just see it. I just see the Riders finding a way to squeak one out.
Yeah, you never know on Labor Day. It's just such a big tradition and such a big game that anything can happen, but I think you're wrong on this one.
Well, we're going to wait and see. All right, yeah. Second to last game of the week. It's Labor Day Monday. It's the two classics. First up, because the Ticats game is at night, on Monday afternoon, we have the Edmonton Eskimos heading to Calgary to take on the Stampeders. Mike, who you got in this one?
It's a really tough call, this game. Calgary has the best record in the league by far, and they've been the best team. But I think the Eskimos are improving each week. I think their offense is better than the Stampeders, and I think their defense is just getting better and better and better. So I'm going to go with the Eskimos.
I'm going the opposite of you here as well. I'm taking the Stampeders. I think until I see them lose,
that's stupid.
It's going to be tough to pick against the Stamps. I know I did it last week, but that was a bit of a homer pick. I know I said I'm going to do it in October. Even if the Stamps haven't lost until they get to that October game against Ticats, I'm going to take Ticats there again. A little bit of a homer pick. They're playing at such a crisp level. They don't beat themselves. They don't make mistakes, and they capitalize on the mistakes that your teams make. They kind of just wait around for the team they're playing to make a mistake, and that's when they blow their doors open. I see something similar. I think it's going to be a close game, but I think Edmonton just makes that one critical mistake at the wrong time. The Stamps capitalize, and they get the W. Last game of the week, Monday night, the main event. The Toronto Argonauts head to Tim Hortons Field to take on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, you've already pretty much made your pick, but let's make it official. Who you got in this one?
I got the Tiger Cats. Just at home, in front of that crowd, they can't lose. They just can't. So I got the Tiger Cats.
I'm with you, buddy. The Tiger Cats are humming. I think they are going to absolutely destroy the Argos. I think this one, we're going to see Zach Caleros put up numbers like we saw against the Stampeders, because I don't think the Argos defense is anywhere near as good, especially now that they don't have Keon Raymond as Calgary's defense. I think these guys are going to wipe the floor with them. Not sure how it will go the following week, but this one, I think the Tiger Cats just absolutely destroy the Argos. Get to that 500 mark, and I think maybe you breathe a little easier after Labor Day.
I certainly hope so.
All right, so question time. We had a couple of holdovers from last week, and instead of asking for new questions, I decided we would just keep these ones here. I think they're two good ones. So first comes from Rob on Twitter. You can find him at 99AA Tigers Coach. He's asked a few questions in the past. He asks, if the season ended today, does Orlando Steinhauer have a head coaching job offer elsewhere, or does he sign back in Hamilton as assistant head coach and defensive coordinator? Mike, your answer.
I think he's I think his time in Hamilton will be over at the end of the season. I think he's been a dedicated member for however long it's been. We saw Jason Moss get a promotion to head coach in Edmonton after a shorter time being a coordinator than Steiner has been a coordinator. So I think his time in Hamilton comes to an end at the end of the season, and he's a head coach somewhere else.
I'm going to flip it. I'm going to go the opposite way, and not because I don't think he deserves a head coaching opportunity. I absolutely believe he does. I just don't know where there's going to be one. I think Chris Jones is locked in Saskatchewan. That's not going to change, even if they do go 1-17. Dave Dickinson is not leaving Calgary. Jason Moss is not leaving Edmonton. Wally Buono is not leaving BC unless he wants to. Ken Austin's not stepping down. I don't think Scott Milanovic is going anywhere, even if the bottom falls out in Toronto. Rick Campbell, I think, with a Grey Cup appearance last year and the Red Blacks being a 500 team, I think he's there. That leaves two positions available, and that's Winnipeg and Montreal. Now, Montreal, who the hell knows what's going to go on? And Winnipeg might not make a change, because if Mike O'Shea gets this team into the playoffs, if they continue to play the type of ball they're playing now and they win 8, 9, 10 games in the playoffs, you're not going to fire him. So
no.
I just don't know if there's going to be a head coaching opportunity for Steinhauer to take. And if there's not, why wouldn't he stay here as the second in charge of the Ticats?
Yeah, you make some good points there. I just think that he's itching to make that step up. And, you know, maybe the opportunity isn't there, and maybe he signs back with the Ticats. I hope he does. I think he's a great coordinator, and he's a big asset to this team. But, yeah, if the opportunity is there, I think he'll jump at it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. If there's an opportunity there and he is offered a position, I could absolutely see him going. I just don't know where there will be one. The only one I can legitimately think is Montreal, but Jim Koch really wants to be the head coach in Montreal. It's almost like he staked his entire reputation on the fact that he wants to be the head coach of the Al. So I just don't know where there's going to be an opening for him unless someone is fired or steps down that is just completely shocking.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah, I don't see Jim Koch giving up the head coaching responsibilities unless he's told he has to. So yeah, maybe you made some very good points, and it could go either way. So I'll still stick to that he's a head coach next year, but it's going to be tough to find opportunity in this league. So yeah, for sure.
Okay, so our second and final question comes from Eric at Edland Eric on Twitter, and he asked a very simple question: where are the Ticats strongest and weakest in terms of positional depth? Mike, your answer.
Weakest, I got to go with the secondary. We've talked about it many times that this secondary is probably the weakest spot on this team. Strongest, that's a little tougher to think about. I'm probably going to have to go defensive line. I think that they've accumulated a lot of talent over the years through the draft, through free agency. They lost a lot of players in the offseason, but I think that you could plug and play a lot of guys that are sitting on the bench to that defensive line and have close to the same results. So I'm going to go with weakest secondary, strongest defensive line.
Two very good picks. I am with you on the secondary. I don't think I have to go into that. You made a very good claim as to why that is the weakest part of this team. Defensive line is where I would have gone. I completely agree with you. They have developed some nice depth along the defensive line. But my pick is receiver. That receiving core, top to bottom, with the guys that they have waiting in the wings as well. They've drafted Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones. Oh, you messed it up. God damn it. Anyway, they drafted Mike Jones this year. They have Matt Coates, who got into some action. Spencer Watt is a guy that can contribute. They just signed John Chiles. They have obviously the four that we've been talking about ad nauseum most of the season. I think the receiving core is where this team is the strongest. And but you're right. I do like the defensive line depth as well. But I got to go with the receiving core.
Yeah, that's a good choice as well. You know, the guys already have, and then the guys that they're bringing in to adds to the depth. So yeah, I thought about the receivers as well, but I went with the defensive line. But you could go either way with those two positions.
Yeah, well, it's good to have some disagreement. It's good to have some discussion. So I'm glad you went differently than I did. That always makes for a fun little chat.
Yes.
All right. We are done, folks. That is it for this week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to have your questions answered by Mike and myself, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am Josh_Smith_82. And of course, you can always post your questions in the comment section on 3Down Nation under where we post the show. So that was episode 54 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat them raw and get above 500 and I won't be so pissy.